Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to start.
Got one job to do. That's win. That means you stay focused for four quarters. Know your assignments and finish on every play. Don't be looking for shortcuts and don't even think about making excuses. Because if you want the W, you're going to have to earn it. Nothing comes for free. Not 1 yard. You pay for it with sweat, with determination, with heart. You do things the right way because that's the only way. Pick up your teammates, you keep your head high, and you remember everything you went through to get here. Because at the end of the day, there's only one person looking back at you in the mirror, and that's one person you don't want to cheat.
Learn to work my microphone yet. Yeah, baby, yeah. It is time for the ballot. My name's Tom Michael Presidente, and it is so glad that you could join us on Saturday. Pro Bowl weekend, boys and girls. Got a new coach here in Indianapolis, and the feud has started between owner Jim Irsay and Peyton Manning. Well, apparently they've kissed and made nice, and we're going to jump into that conversation. We've got a jam-packed show for you today. As always, Mr. Jay Graves of the Jay Graves Report going to join us. Mr. Axel, a.k.a. Chad, or Chad, a.k.a. Axel, will join us throughout this first hour. Second hour coming up, we're going to be talking some college hoops. Evan Williams and Jimmy the Intern join us. We're going to break down some IU Big Ten action and the outlook. Coming up in March. But joining me right now, Mr. Jay Graves of the Jay Graves Report. Holla at your boy.
Holla at your boy. What's going on, man?
What is going on, my friend?
And life is good. Life is good. How you been this week?
Man, it's been a busy, hectic week trying to do a lot of other things that go on, you know, with hosting world-renowned radio show such as The Balance, plus work a real job that pays an actual salary. Hey,
tough,
that's why we call it The Balance, because we've got to make a balance of life, of good, bad, the yin, the yang, and so forth. Well, we won't waste any time about it. Colts have a new coach. Here's what went on this week, guys. If you didn't know, Indianapolis Colts have hired Baltimore Ravens. Yes, we took another chunk out of Baltimore, Jay. Colts just keep biting at the Baltimore Ravens, don't they, or the city of Baltimore. We take another one of their boys. Joe Pagano, new head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Here's what happened down on West 56th Street here in Indianapolis this week.
I'd like to introduce the new coach of the Indianapolis Colts, Chuck Pagano.
Wow. Has been a whirlwind. Words can't describe the emotions that I'm going through right now, and the feelings coming off probably the most devastating loss that I've ever been a part of in the AFC Championship game, and to go in that locker room and face those men and see the faces, and we all know how hard it is to get to that to that stage and just see how disheartening it was, and the tears, and it was just it's an all-time low. And then, you know, the last thing I ever expected came across my table, and now here I sit at an all-time high. So whatever it was 72 hours ago, I was here, you know, and my family will tell you that, and they were there. And now I'm at the top of the pinnacle, and I've spent 28 years of my life in coaching, waiting for this opportunity, and I have Mr. Irsay to thank.
And there you go. There you have it, Mr. Jay Graves. I want to get to your article that you've written, I'm a Hustlin'. You know, I tried to find that song, but I realized real quickly that it has certain amounts of language that I probably should not be using on the air here. So I had a theme song all wound up for you there, Jay. I'm a hustler, whatever. You know, that song is not even in my genre or my alphabet or my vocabulary, but I knew that it existed, and I wanted to build you up real nice and proper. So real quickly, tell us a little bit about your new article of jaygravesreport.com, I'm a Hustler.
Well, you know what? I tell you what, it was an article that I wrote. I just put it back out today, but I wrote that article the weekend prior to the start of the season, and it was Every Day I'm Hustling. It's taken from Rick Ross, you know, my man down in Miami. But Peyton Manning and the Colts, in my opinion, ran a hustle on the Colts fans this year. It started back in July when we were going through the lockout. Peyton Manning says that he couldn't get with the trainers or the coaches or the team doctors, and he had the surgery. He didn't have the surgery until May. Well, he knew at the end of the season last year that he needed to have surgery, but he didn't have the surgery until May. But then he told the fans that, well, and not until July did they tell the fans that he had the surgery. And then they end up signing him to a contract, which was like a $90 million contract at the time, made it look like he took less money, et cetera. You know, he was being a team player, blah, blah, blah. But everybody knew that Peyton Manning wasn't going to be able to play back in the summer. But they signed him to the contract because, in my opinion, you sign him to the contract, then fans in this area will buy tickets. If you don't sign him to the contract and you tell everybody that he's hurt, then people won't buy tickets, because unfortunately, Indianapolis is a fair weather city when it comes to fans supporting the team. As you can see, during the season when they started losing, people were just giving tickets away, wasn't going to the games, etc. So if we were going into the season knowing that Peyton Manning wasn't going to play, they weren't going to be able to sell the season tickets that they needed to sell. They weren't going to be able to sell the advertisement space that they needed to sell. So it just made sense to spend the $20 million this year to set him on the sideline and tell everybody that he may or may not play so that people would come to the games. Now, all of a sudden, you know, we're the second pick in the – we got the first pick in the draft, and now all of a sudden people want to understand that, hey, maybe his career is over. Well, his career was over last summer. I wrote the article in September 9th, 2011, that he wasn't going to play anymore and that everybody was being hustled. But now everybody's starting to see what Jay Graves wrote on the jaygravesreport.com 5 months later.
Well, I will tell you what, Jay, you cannot claim the title of being the Rush Limbaugh of sports, because that is me. I am always right, but I'll let you go right along with me on this, because here's what you may have said that his career was over. What I did say early on, in fact, actually, funny story, this is how I can prove what I'm saying to be correct. This is how I got associated with Gary Snyder's show. I wrote a blog and did a show with the opinion that Peyton Manning would be starting for the Washington Redskins next year. Everybody went crazy on that blog, and I got responses from different media outlets all over the United States saying, are you crazy? Well, are you smoking the crack pipe? What are you talking about? So Gary Snyder calls me up. He says, hey, man, I want you to come on the show and talk about that. She said, I'd love to. Well, you know, one thing led to another, and obviously, you know, we all know our great, awesome relationship with the awesome, fantastic Gary Snyder. And he's not even on the show right now. I don't even know why I'm talking so good about the guy, you know. But, yeah, so, you know, you're not the only one. I just want to let you know that we're going to have to co-pilot this I Told You So, because I said way back when that Peyton Manning, but I've kind of changed my tune a little bit, and I still maintain the argument that Peyton Manning, until I hear it from the mouth of Ryan Grigson or Jim Irsay or Peyton Manning himself or now Joe Pagano, that Peyton Manning will not start. I am under the firm belief that he will, and there's a couple reasons why I say that he'll be back and that they'll pay the $28 million. It's a lot of money to pay, but it's really nothing to pay for Jim Irsay. He already knew that he was going to have to maybe pay that money anyway when he agreed to the terms and conditions of the contract. He also already knew that when they came out of the labor agreement with the new collective bargaining agreement or whatever that they came up with, that he would have to do one of three things. He would have to drop him, he would have to trade him, or pay him. Those are the only three things that he can do. He cannot restructure his contract. So he knew going in that, hey, one of these three things are going to happen. I don't believe and I don't buy into the theory, and again, maybe that's what you're trying to point out in your article, that it's a conspiracy theory that Peyton Manning and Jim Irsay have had this big elaborate plan to basically – get Peyton out of the picture and into retirement quietly, much like shifting him out the back door of a restaurant. I don't believe that. I believe that Peyton Manning still wants to play. Now, maybe they weren't in full disclosure of his injury and the extent of it. Maybe they wanted to keep it in-house, and I understand that, as that was kind of one of the big heated moments between Jim Irsay and Peyton Manning, that, hey, we've got to keep this in the house. You know, so maybe there was some truth to what you're saying, is that we as the fans did not know the extent of the injury. There again, going back to ticket sales being everything, and that very well could be true. But I don't believe at the moment anyway, and again, I might be one of these naive guys out there, but I don't want to be that guy in the media that jumps on the train that says, hey, Peyton Manning, let's read between the lines. Him and Irsay is having a little lover's quarrel. That means it must mean that they're getting divorced. No. No, you know, I love my wife. I love her a lot. We fight every single day.
Hey, but
so Go ahead.
So I was just saying, you got to keep in mind that if they pay him the $28 million, remember, you've got the first pick in the draft coming your way, and you've got to pay him at least a guarantee of about $25 or $26 million for being the first pick in the draft. So at that point, you've got about $56 million sitting in one position, and you can only play one of those guys. From a financial and business standpoint, it makes absolutely no sense when you've got all kind of holes all over the field that you need to cover in terms of getting free agents and draft picks. That's just too much money to hit on your cap just to satisfy and gamble with the fact that Peyton Manning may play. I mean, it's at a point now where you've got to make a decision and you've got to make it fast. But to sit on $56 million at one position is asinine.
And for that aspect, I totally agree with you. I think that they've got to do something. And I guess that goes back to where I believe that Andrew Luck, and again, I'm probably the only one out there that's saying this, so come September or even sooner than that, April, I'll be able to wear yet another I Told You So badge, that we will not be drafting Andrew Luck. I think that they're going to trade that State. Now, I don't know necessarily they're going to use their number one draft pick on a defense. I think that we're going to end up with Robert Griffin III. I think that Peyton Manning's got another year, maybe 2 years left in him at the most. I think that this next year, Peyton Manning wants to prove to the world he's a competitor. He's been in the league for a long time. I think he wants to prove to the world that he's still got it. As much as he doesn't want to pull a Brett Favre, I think that that is what we're looking at with him. He wants everybody to know that he's still Peyton Manning. So whether or not he plays with the Colts or he plays with the Washington Redskins or the Jets or whatever, if he can absolutely play next year, he's going to play. And I think, and again, I haven't heard it from Peyton Manning's mouth or Pagano or Ryan or Jim Irsay. All I've heard is a bunch of media buzz. And, you know, they like to jump on this. And you know, like I said, I'm not a media hater. Obviously, I've been in it a long, long time. And when I say I'm the Rush Limbaugh of sports, I'm not saying that I hate media as much as Rush Limbaugh hates the media, the mainstream media. What I am saying is that too often, that these mainstream media's guys, in order to engage their listeners inside of conversation, like to stir the ultimate pot of controversy, and they like to let people know that, hey, check this out. Did you read between the lines here? And I'm guilty of it too. You know, I think that statement that was issued yesterday between Jim Irsay and the Colts and Peyton Manning about how they've made up and how everything, it was just a little too perfect. It was a little too well written. So if you want to read between the lines, that maybe, you know, that's a possibility. But, you know, here's the thing. Really, I think that Peyton Manning has some gump left in him. But I think he has some mojo left. I think he could get out there and play. Now, the thing is, he doesn't have anything to prove to himself or anybody else. The only thing he has to prove is that he can retire at the top of his game, which every pro athlete out there wants to do. And I think that's why I think we got him for another couple years. I think that he would like to stay a Colt and retire a Colt. That's been a dream of his since he started. I don't think that was ever anything that he just said just for the purposes of the fan base and the media. I think that he does want to retire a Colt. Now, is that possible? I don't know. Everybody has their opinion of that. A lot of people think that he will be gone. But I think that we're going to strategically come up with a good strategy to come up with some defense players in the draft. It was not by accident that Jim Irsay hired Ryan Grigson, and it was not by accident that they hired Joe Pagano as the head coach. It was not by accident that Baltimore has the most complex defense schemes out there. And you know, so I would not be surprised if they start working in that strategy, and maybe they don't use their first round pick to pick a defensive position, but I ultimately guarantee they're going to try to put a package together where it includes the trading of Andrew Luck, even if they draft him and trade him later for some key defensive positions, Jay.
Man, I have to say this. With you saying that they may not take the first pick in the draft, I got to ask, have you been out in California this week hanging out with Demi Moore? Man, when you have the first pick in the draft and you got a 36-year-old quarterback with a neck injury standing on the bus line waiting to see if he can get on the bus or not, and you got a young stud about to come out of college. Yeah, granted, you're going to lose next year. You're going to lose them for a couple of years when you get a brand new quarterback. But when you have that pick and you've got holes all over the field and you were 2-14 the year before, you have no choice, brother, but to take that first pick, especially if it's the best prototype to come out within the last 14 years, probably since Peyton Manning came out. Now, we don't know if this guy's going to be a Ryan Leaf or if he's going to be a Todd Marinovich or if he's going to be a Peyton Manning, but you have to take a chance on the guy simply because you're at the bottom of Peyton's career or at the end of Peyton's career, and like I keep saying, he's one missed assignment from not even being able to play again because it's a neck injury. It's not a knee. It's not an arm. It's not an elbow. It's a neck injury, and that's a serious business. And if he's smart, he'd just ride away in the sunset and just allow the young kid to take over and not even have to fool with all the controversy of wrestling in the parking lot over the position.
All right, well, that sounds good. We've got to take a break real quick, Jay. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this at 9:30. Mr. Rich Nye of WTHR Sports here in Indianapolis on the front lines of this Colts situation is going to break it down from the perspective of what he's seen from covering the Colts for many, many years here in the city of Indianapolis and what he thinks about Peyton Manning, Jim Irsay, and the new coach, Chuck Pagano. Welcome to Indianapolis. It's Super Bowl, close to Super Bowl. Super Bowl Village is open, downtown Indianapolis. If you're close, you need to drive on down here. It's really starting to look like a Super Bowl. Plus, it's the Pro Bowl. We're going to talk a little bit about that within the next 30 minutes. And at 10 o'clock, we'll jump into some college hoops. We'll be right back.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
Jay, we can get in some time to talk about them. I know that they're off to a good start, although they did lose against the Bulls here, and I think they lost yesterday against the Celtics. We'll talk a little bit about that. Also want to welcome our new sponsor, Terry's Indy Pet Service in Indianapolis. These guys, I tell you what, they do everything for your pet. Doggy daycare. They make house calls. They come out to your house. I tell you what, there is no more taking your pets to the kennel. There's no need to do that. Terry shows up at your house while you're gone. She plays with your pets. She cleans up the poo, outside poo, hopefully. Or even if there's an accident inside, she cleans it up. She even lets them have sleepovers at her house. She has what's called a pet taxi service. That's right. If you've got to go to work, got to take your dog to the groomer, got to take your dog or cat to the pet to the vet, she takes care of it. She does ear cleaning. I tell you what, she does everything. She will even feed your snake that mouse. She ain't afraid. Spiders, birds, whatever it is, she will clean up, feed, or whatever. If you get, if it's your pet, she will take care of it. Give Terry a call. Terry's Indy's Pet Service. 317-410-3377 in Indianapolis, 317-410-3377. All right, Mr. J, the city of Indianapolis, you and I live here. It is taking shape for Super Bowl 46. The Super Bowl Village is open. The zip lines are unzipped.
You been down there? Are you going to get on the zip line, my friend?
Man, not a chance. I'm going downtown, but not a chance am I going to get on a zip line. That just doesn't look like fun to me. That's too high risk for me.
I tell you what. I was in the Army. I jumped out of airplanes, and, you know, I have to admit, I did that before in military, but I've gained a few pounds over the years, and I am not in the peak physical condition that I once was. And I tell you what, it's an 800, for those of you that do not know, here in Indianapolis, the Super Bowl Village has opened up in downtown Indianapolis with an 800-foot, I think there's actually four of them, zip lines, that it's open to the public. I think Mayor Greg Ballard might try it out, though. He cuts the ribbon down there. He declared the downtown hub for Super Bowl activities to be underway. The NFL Experience Fan Hall also opens up, plus, of course, nearby Lucas Oil Stadium. And, you know, so a lot of things going on in downtown Indianapolis. And I can tell you one thing. If you're close enough to drive here, might as well drive here early. Because I'm going to tell you, the closer it gets to the Super Bowl, the harder it is going to be to get down there in your privately owned vehicle. And unless you're rich like Jay Graves, you're not going to be able to pay for parking. You know, I saw some lots online, Jay, close right around there by the Super Bowl Village and Lucas Oil Stadium, that were running for $100. $100.
Where some of these lots, man, are going to be at upwards of $200. I think I may just get a van, and you can park at my house, and I'll drive you downtown for $100, and I'll wash your car while I'm at it.
That's what I'm talking about. Oh, my gosh. It is. I tell you what, it is absolute price gouging going on here in Indianapolis. So all I can tell you is, hey, guys, you're welcome to come to Indianapolis. Make sure you get that equity line on your home done and closed so that you've got plenty of cash when you get here. You know, I live in the city. I live here, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's crazy down there. But, yeah, come on down and enjoy the experience in downtown Indianapolis. Super Bowl Village is open and ready to go, and obviously all teamed up for Super Bowl 46. You know, one other thing that I thought was really neat down there, Jay, was the Indy cars that they've got going on there. So
yeah,
with all the team logos and stuff. Well, we're going to be standing by here. We're going to be joining Rich Nye of WTHR Sports, going to break down this whole Colts saga. Real quickly, what are your thoughts, Jay, on the new head coach?
Hey, you know what? First of all, let me say this about the zip line. I'm going to give you a secret. This is only for the family that's listening. When you go downtown and you see the zip line, there won't be any brothers in line to ride the zip line.
Are the brothers afraid of heights or what?
Hey, brothers afraid of heights, man. We're not getting up there playing with the zip line in wintertime. No way, brother. So I tell you, you don't have to worry about the brothers standing in line waiting on the zip line. Hey, but
well,
you know,
go ahead.
I was excited to hear the enthusiasm in Chuck Pagano's voice when he took the job. I mean, just had the last two head coaches were very mild-mannered, very poised, and, you know, didn't go up too high and too low. They were just right down the middle with Dungy and Caldwell. But I think this guy's going to be one of those rah-rah, in your face, let's get it done right now type coaches. And that's the type of coach that I've always been accustomed to enjoying. So I'm really excited to see what he's going to bring to the organization and what he can bring out of the players, even though, you know, those other guys were successful with the way they did it. But, some players respond a little differently to a rah-rah, in your face, let's run through the wall type of guy. And Chuck Pagano strikes me as being one of those type of guys.
But I absolutely agree. And I tell you, one of the guys right down there on the front lines and has gotten to have a conversation with Chuck Pagano is Mr. Rich Nye, WGHR Sports. Rich Nye, the sports guy. Welcome back to The Balance, Rich. How you doing, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Hey, it's so glad to have you on board. And I know you're always on the forefront of everything that's going on, and you're the foremost expert of the Indianapolis Colts here in Indianapolis. So I want to talk with you a little bit about Mr. Joe Pagano. But before we get to that, I want to talk with you a little bit about the dust storm between Colts quarterback Peyton Manning and Colts owner Jim Irsay. Should we be reading between the lines? Is this just a lover's spat? Or is this something that's squashed now that they've released that very well-prepared press release?
Well, I think they kissed and made up, and that's the best way, I think, to describe it. I don't think either one of them ever intended to make the other look bad. I don't think either one of them wanted that from their comments. But I think the way things played out this week, it got a little testy, or at least appeared to be that way in the media. And when they saw that from the outside and how it was being perceived in the public, I think they wanted to quickly nip that in the bud the best they could. I think these two men, Jim Irsay and Peyton Manning, are friends. I think they respect each other. They both respect what they mean to the organization and what they mean to the community. And they don't want it to end like this if it's going to end. And they certainly want to have an opportunity to move forward together if that allows itself as well.
Well, and here's I agree with you. I think, and we were just talking about this at the very beginning of the show, Jay Graves and I here, that I think that Peyton Manning wants to stay with the Indianapolis Colts. I think Peyton Manning wants to retire a Colt. So I guess that opens up the provocative question. If Peyton Manning stays, who do they draft in that number? Do they still draft Luck? Do they look at trading the position for Luck and get somebody different? Do they look at Griffin? Do they look at a defensive mind? Because I look at Joe Pagano, who led one of the most complex defenses out there with the Baltimore Ravens. I look at Jim Irsay bringing Ryan Grigson from the Philadelphia Phillies. I mean, Eagles. Like, I got baseball on my mind. I don't know. I'm looking at the snow, wishing that it'd be spring. Maybe baseball's on my mind, the Philadelphia Eagles. But it just seems to me that Jim Irsay is really trying to focus on that defense, and that seems to be a big, big problem that the Indianapolis Colts are having. So does he fix it in the draft, or what do you think? What should we really be reading into the future of Peyton Manning?
Well, the Colts have the number one pick, and Jim Irsay's made it clear that going forward with this franchise, the three most important things are the general manager, the head coach, and the franchise quarterback. He's publicly stated that. That's what happened in 1998 when Peyton Manning was drafted. He had all three of those new pieces in place. And I think that's what's going to happen in 2012, regardless of whether Peyton Manning stays or goes. If Peyton Manning is healthy and can prove that by March 8th that he has a reasonable chance of being the football player that he once was, then I think Peyton Manning will still be with the Colts. If he can't prove by March 8th that he can throw a football, then I think the Colts are going to have to, unfortunately, move on without Peyton Manning. But in regards to the pick, I think whether Peyton Manning is here or not, the Colts are going to draft their next quarterback with the number one pick. And I'm not Mel Kiper, but I've talked to people, lots of people, and read lots of people who do this for a living and analyze players for a living, and everyone says that Andrew Luck is the clear choice as the best quarterback available. So I think it's, at this point, obvious that the Colts are going to draft Andrew Luck, and there's no way they would trade him away just for the opportunity to have several draft picks or a marquee defensive player. I think the keystone of your franchise and the franchise quarterback is too important that even if you know that Peyton Manning's going to be with you, or you hope that he's going to be with you for the next 2, 3, maximum 4 years, nonetheless, you still go and get Andrew Luck and have the future of your franchise secured there at the quarterback position, which is the most important position.
Well, joining us also is Mr. Jay Graves of the JayGravesReport.com. Jay, do you have any questions or conversation for Rich Nye of WTHR?
No, I'm just in complete agreement with what Rich said. I said that back in August. If you get the pick, you've got to take the pick because you've got to pay the guy the first pick in the draft $24, $25, $26 million guaranteed. You can't have all that money tied into one position, and you can only play one of them. But I just don't think that Peyton's going to be around, personally.
And also joining us is Mr. $2 Bill Josh, Josh Elmore. Josh, do you have any questions for Rich from WTHR?
My question would be, has anybody heard, is Chuck Pagano going to be able to bring his defensive staff with him from Baltimore? Or are the Ravens going to shoot that down just, I'm going to say, more out of spite for Indianapolis, and actually they don't want him to have the assistance?
Well, I know that from John Harbaugh's point of view, the Ravens head coach, he had to be a little bit concerned about that. You're always happy for your assistant, for someone who's worked for you, to succeed and get an opportunity to be a head coach themselves. You're happy for someone to move forward, but you also know that puts your own staff in danger, because first you've got to replace that person, and then that person who's become a head coach, talking about Chuck Pagano, is likely to look at some of the people he's worked with as his assistants here in Indianapolis. I know, I can't even think of the guy's name right now, it slips me, but I know just yesterday the Ravens quickly moved to promote one of their defensive assistants to defensive coordinator. So that guy is likely not coming to Indianapolis because he's already been named Ravens defensive coordinator. And I haven't looked at their staff to see who else is out there on defense that they might be interested in. But that would certainly always seem to be a natural, that you might bring a couple of defensive assistants along, particularly, you know, no reason he couldn't bring some guys from the Baltimore offense that he likes and has worked with and trust as well, although I know they've already said that Cam Cameron is staying Baltimore as offensive coordinator, so that's not going to happen. On the Colts staff, the entire defensive staff was blown out. There's virtually no one left. You need a new coordinator. You need a new linebackers coach. You need a new defensive line coach. You need a new defensive backs coach. And on offense, Clyde Christensen, the offensive coordinator, is about the only one who has stayed. And, of course, he's sort of the last living link, if you will, to Peyton Manning, and is the one reason I think the Colts still would like to keep Peyton Manning, is the fact that they've kept Clyde around, a guy who's very familiar with the Peyton offense, if I can call it that, and can continue to work with Peyton if Peyton returns. But there are a lot of positions to fill, and where those guys are going to come from, certainly you would think that Chuck would maybe look to his staff in Baltimore and see if there's someone he might want to bring along. But he'll look all over the league, I'm sure, and he's coached in enough places for enough time that he's got connections to people all over the league, and not just in the NFL, but in college as well.
Hey, Rich, this is Jay.
Go ahead, Jay.
When it comes to coaching, once again, he's only been there for, been introduced, only been in town for just a few days. Is there a possibility that the remaining offensive staff could get moved and he could bring other people in if he decides to, or has it been solidified that those guys that are there are going to stay?
That's a great question that we don't know the answer to. I would assume that yesterday and today and this weekend is the time when Chuck is going to immediately reach out and talk to Clyde Christensen to find out if those two want to and can work together. One thing that was never brought up that I was always curious about was Jim Irsay said there were 8 candidates he interviewed for this position. To my knowledge, we only identified 7. This is just me speculating a little bit, but I'm wondering if Clyde Christensen was that 8th candidate. And I wonder if Clyde had an opportunity to interview to be the head coach. And if he did and didn't get that position, does that affect whether he wants to stay or not? Clyde's been a longtime assistant, much like Chuck Pagano, and you know, maybe is ready and thinks he's ready and would welcomed the opportunity to be a head coach. And I wonder if he had an opportunity to interview for the Colts head coaching job. Now, knowing Clyde a little bit, I think he's the kind of guy who would still be willing to work for just about anybody and would be very happy to continue working for the Colts. But that may also have a lot to do with Peyton Manning. Again, if Andrew Luck's coming in, I don't know if Clyde wants to stay and start over or not.
And, Rick, Chad, a.k.a. Axel, is joining us also as well. And I know, Chad, you've always got a big insight, and you bring a lot to the show about the Colts and about the NFL. And I know you have some great theories regarding the Colts and the NFL. So do you have anything that you want to discuss with Rich while we've got him on the line, Chad?
Yes, I just wanted to know, Brian Grigson interviewed Mark Trestman. And Mark Trestman, I know he's, as a head coach in the CFL, he won the Grey Cup. And whenever he's been offensive coordinator, he's been quarterback coach and offensive coordinator at the NFL level. And Rich Gannon had his best year under Mark Trestman, and the Browns' offensive numbers when Mark Trestman was offensive coordinator was spectacular as well. And that guy is a very good offensive mind. So is there any chance that now that he has been interviewed for a head coaching possibility that he might be willing to take on this challenge of becoming the offensive coordinator for the Colts, or is Mark Trestman purely a West Coast guy, West Coast offensive system guy?
Right. I would say, from my perspective, it's kind of tough to accept the consolation prize. And that's kind of what I was just referring to with Clyde Christensen. If Mark Trestman interviewed for the head coaching position, I don't know if he really wants to work for Chuck Pagano when he wanted to have Chuck Pagano's job and, you know, was right there with him in the interview process as a candidate. So that might be a little bit awkward and maybe something that Trestman might not be interested in. It's possible, but again, obviously the Colts at this point still have an offensive coordinator. And they've kept Clyde this long. Now, when they kept Jim Caldwell around, that didn't last very long. But they've kept Clyde through this entire process. And you would that would lead me to believe that they believe that Clyde could work with the next coach. Or, again, perhaps they felt like Clyde was a potential head coaching candidate, although that's never been identified by any report that I've seen. And I have no reason to believe that he was a candidate. It's just kind of me wondering about the situation. But I guess I would find it a little bit surprising if Trestman would come here after he was himself a head coaching candidate with the Colts.
Now, we're joining with us is Rich Nye, Rich Nye, the sports guy of WTHR Sports, who's always on the forefront of the Indianapolis Colts and really follows the Indianapolis Colts and does a lot with the Colts and is very, very familiar with them. And I certainly want to talk about the upcoming Super Bowl that's just 8 days and some change away. But one thing I want to ask you about, we talked about this at the beginning of the show, about the $50 million, really, that Indianapolis is really fooling themselves if they think they can survive with upwards of $50 million. Now, in the two players and only one person can start. And I know a lot of people are in love with the Hollywood dream of having Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. But really, realistically, we've heard Archie back and forth say yes, no, they could survive on the same team. Peyton's a very good team player. I don't think that he would be a hater, per se, using those words. But do you really think that Andrew Luck, if they bring back Peyton Manning, that – I mean, I don't know. To me, it just seems like that the Colts could trade away – if they decide to keep Peyton Manning, they could trade away that number one pick for – a bountiful amount of picks to really help them get in a Super Bowl a lot quicker than Andrew Luck could get them. Does that make any sense, or am I the only one that thinks that?
Well, you might not be the only one, but I don't think that. I don't think the Colts in any way are going to trade away their future. And I think what a lot of you have said this morning, I think Jay said this, I think Peyton is done in Indianapolis, and I think all signs point toward that. And I think that's a situation that's very hard for fans to accept. I think it's very hard for the organization to come to grips with, and I think it's hard for me as a media person to come to grips with. Look, I've enjoyed covering Peyton Manning. I've enjoyed the success the Colts have had while he's been the quarterback, but all signs point to Peyton has done in Indianapolis. But the Colts are moving on in everything they've done this offseason. And while if Peyton is healthy, I do personally believe they should bring him back and let him finish his career in Indianapolis. And I feel like if he's healthy, he can still help this team win football games. I don't think that comes at the expense of trading away your future in Andrew Luck. I know it's a lot of money, but it's only going to be for 2 or 3 years, 4 years at the most. It's the NFL, and you can cut anybody, including Peyton Manning, at any time you want, and there's no guaranteed contracts. So even if Peyton would have his contract extended with this bonus, it may be only for this year, and that would be very painful for the salary cap for this year, but not impossible, as Bill Polian explained before he left. But the Colts have said, and Jim Irsay has said, that he wants to have a more balanced team. He wants to have a more balanced salary cap team, meaning we're going to spend more money on defense and offense evenly. So I think everything does point to this is the end of the Peyton Manning era in Indianapolis. But if Peyton would come back, I don't think you trade away Andrew Luck to try to build around him, to build around Peyton for one more run. I just think that's too short-sighted. And this franchise is not looking at things in a short-sighted way. They hired a first-time general manager. They hired a first-time head coach. These are people who need time to build and need time to grow. It's not a quick fix here.
Well, moving on to the game at hand, or at least it's building up the momentum here in the city of Indianapolis. Super Bowl Village opened up yesterday downtown. First of all, I want to know, are you going to do a live report from a zip line? I want to know, are you going to do that?
I would love to get that opportunity. I just hope to get the opportunity to go down the zip line before the 9 days is up. That looks awesome. I saw several of my colleagues from various stations and media got to do that yesterday. I did not get that chance, but I sure would love to. My boss, Dave Calabro, got to go down the zip line, and he said it was a terrific experience, and I've done a little zip lining myself, and I would love to do some downtown.
Well, it is starting to look like a Super Bowl downtown. Obviously, some of the things they've done is give an Indianapolis touch or an Indianapolis twist. The Indy cars are down there with a special car for each NFL team that's down there, plus a lot of different things that are kind of unique to Indianapolis. This is Indianapolis' first Super Bowl, and I tell you what, I go to I cover the Indianapolis 500 in the Brickyard every year, and they're used to big events, and the Big Ten Championship, and a lot of great big events Indianapolis hosts. They're no stranger to big events, but as many times as I have been to the Indianapolis 500, and maybe because it's new, but I have never seen the excitement or the buzz that the city of Indianapolis has had. This is probably the biggest thing that's ever happened to Indianapolis as a city. So what are your thoughts covering here in the city of Indianapolis, how Indianapolis is handling and will be able to handle the humongous amounts of crowds that are on its way here to Indianapolis?
Is it true that you were in the mosh pit for the Bret Michaels concert last night?
I was not. I stayed home.
But there's no truth to that rumor. Okay, I hold credit.
No truth.
So I think you're absolutely right that this is just huge for Indianapolis, and I think Indianapolis is going to put on a great show. The infrastructure that Indianapolis has in place, I believe, is perfect for hosting an event like this. Yes, is downtown traffic going to be horrible? Yes. But once you get there and get yourself parked, you're going to have a great time, whether you're a fan, a media person, a player coming in for the game, a celebrity coming in for the game. Things are going to be very convenient. And I think the only thing, as I drive to work today on a sunshiny day with the temperature at 34 and just a little bit of snow melting away, I think the only thing that could put a damper on this whatsoever is horribly bad weather, which the forecast looks pretty darn good next week. We know what weather did to ruin Dallas's party last year when they were totally unprepared for it. I don't think that's going to happen here in Indianapolis. And unless there's just really, really, you know, I'm talking a snowstorm or something, I think this is going to be a great party. I think it's going to be a great time for everybody, not just those coming in from out of town, but for those who are here in Indianapolis. I really encourage people who are listening to this show to get down to Indianapolis this weekend before it gets totally out of hand, before it gets totally crazy, while you can enjoy the NFL experience in the NFL Village. Do it this weekend. Do it by the early next week at the latest. I mean, coming down next week's going to be – next weekend's going to be great and fun, but it's going to be a mass of people that you may not want to deal with. But it's something that I think may not come back to Indianapolis. I think if we put on a good show, we'll get a chance to host another one perhaps. But they're going to continue to go to New Orleans and Miami and Phoenix. We're not going to be in that regular rotation like we are for Final Fours. It's just not going to happen, I don't think, because of the weather. But I think Indianapolis could have a chance to host another one, let's say, in 8 to 10 years. But having said that, it might be the only chance. And if it is, I think everybody should get a little taste of it.
All right, well, we do have an actual football game that's going to take place here in Indianapolis. It's the Giants and the Patriots. So we'll just kind of go through my panel here. Jay, do you have any questions for Rich regarding the Giants and the Patriots?
Now, one question I have, and I haven't seen it anywhere, I know that they're going to be using the Colts Complex as one of the practice sites. Is the other practice site going to be at University of Indianapolis? Did they ever get that balloon put up?
Yes, the bubble is filled. It is standing and ready to go. It's out at the University of Indianapolis. That will be the NFC practice headquarters where the Giants will practice, and the Patriots will be taking over the Colts Complex for the next 9 days. Well, they get here tomorrow, so about 8 days as it turns out.
So my question is, who drew the short stick to go over to the University of Indianapolis as opposed to the Colts Complex?
I don't know if that was predetermined because the Colts are an AFC team, that the AFC team would come to the Colts Complex, or how they specifically decided that. The Patriots are the home team for the Super Bowl as well, so perhaps that played into the decision a little bit as well. But that's been decided long ago. Certainly wasn't something they just decided, you know, when they found out who was coming. So that was part of the plan long ago, and I don't know if it had to do with the Colts, I'm sorry, with the AFC being the host team and the Colts being in the AFC or not.
Okay.
Now Chad is our fantasy football expert, and he's always on the realm of expertness, if that's a word I can use, in fantasy football. Now, Chad, I do want to say this, and I did put this out on the websites and on Twitter yesterday. You sent me a picture. You were out at Ruth Chris. Was it yesterday that this happened, Chad, that you ran into Reggie Wayne and you got a picture with him? And I tweeted out that to everybody, and somebody tweeted back. That's why I sent you that text. It said, "You look like you're on a skit of David Chappelle." But Chad, I know that you follow these teams almost to an obsession we just won't call you weird. We'll just say that you like football quite a lot, and you know every stat about every player, about everybody at any time. So you have broke down the Giants and the Patriots, I'm quite sure. So what questions do you have for Rich about the New England Patriots and the New York Giants?
Well, I'm just wondering, it's kind of like for media day, do everybody come and assemble at Lucas Oil Stadium? Is that how it works, that both teams get into Lucas Oil Stadium, or how does that work?
Do both teams get to practice at Lucas Oil Stadium before the game?
No, do they arrive at Lucas Oil Stadium just for media day? Because they're practicing in different facilities, I know that. But do they get to Lucas Oil Stadium for media day?
Lucas Oil Stadium is primarily, until game day, just a site for media day for that event. It's not for practice until the actual Super Bowl game.
Okay,
it's the,
go ahead, Chad.
Yeah, it's the Turfgrass, West 56th Street and University of Indianapolis made similar to that of Lucas Oil Stadium. How does that work?
The turf?
Yeah.
Yes, the turf. He was asking about the turf for practices at the different practice facilities, Rich.
There are about two or three brands of artificial turf out there. The modern brand, which is made of a sand base with then a carpet, if you will, the green carpet, and then it's filled with little rubber pellets. That's become the standard now for all artificial turfs. The old carpets that we knew of in the NFL that were so hard on knees and were blamed for so many knee injuries, those are long gone. And I know the Colts Complex has that same kind of turf as the Lucas Oil Stadium. And I have not actually been to the NFC facility, but I assume that that bubble has that same kind of turf. I know that that facility is going to be eventually used by University of Indianapolis for several things. I know they want to have some tennis in there and use it as a multi-sport facility, but I would assume, I have not been out there, but I would assume it has that same kind of turf that we're talking about.
The NFL Fan Experience turf, is that the same turf as Lucas Oil Stadium as well? I mean, they had that turf outside for the NFL Fan Experience.
Right.
I was there yesterday. I was assuming that's the same.
Yes, they have. I know I have not been there myself, but I know they have a field set up for a flag football game they're going to have in there. And I don't know what kind of turf that is. I have not. If you've seen it, you probably have a better idea than me. I can tell you, when you walk on one of these new turfs, you know you've been there because you invariably have rubber pellets in your socks and shoes.
Mm. Now we've got to get to the last question. I want to give that to Josh, $2 bill. Josh, go ahead and get the last question in here before we got to let Rich go. Go ahead.
First of all, Rich, yes, the Patriots are the home team because this is an AFC city, whereas if we were in, say, Dallas, the Giants would be the home team. My question is, though, is Channel 13 or any of the local affiliates going to get the show media day for those who don't have NFL Network? Or is the NFL strictly said it has to be shown on NFL Network only?
I don't think we have any rights. In other words, we would be prohibited from actually showing Media Day live. For us on Channel 13, that window, 11 to noon and then 1 to 2, I believe, are the times. That doesn't allow itself to go into any of our newscasts either. But I don't think we would be allowed to show any Media Day live. I think that is an NFL rights exclusive. So we won't have any live coverage, but obviously we'll have plenty of coverage of the event in our newscast. But I don't think there would be any live local coverage of Media Day.
Well, guys, that's going to have to wrap it up here for this segment. We appreciate Mr. Rich Nye. Appreciate you joining us. Rich, where can people find you? Obviously on Twitter, Facebook, locally here, WTHR. But tell us where people can find you and how they can hook up with you on the different social media outlets.
The Twitter handle is TheSportsGuy13. And on Facebook, just search for Rich Nye, The Sports Guy.
All right, Rich, we appreciate you joining us. Guys, stick around. Coming up in hour number two, we're going to be talking some college hoops. Jimmy the Intern and Evan Williams from Bleeding Gold and Black. We're going to talk Big Ten basketball all right around the corner right here on The Balance.
Come on, baby. Work with me, people. All right. Show me love. Great, baby. Yeah. O.B. Hey.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today. I want to thank our new sponsor to the Balance Series Indy Pit Service. They do everything for your pet. And I tell you what, it doesn't matter if you've got a mouse, a snake, or you're feeding the mouse to the snake. You got a dog, a cat. They got doggy daycare, house calls, sleepovers, taxidermy service. They will take your pet to the vet. They will also come out and just spend some well-needed time with your pet. They clean their ears. They do some nail cleaning. They even do poo duty. I tell you what, it doesn't get any better than Terry's Indy Pet Service in Indianapolis. Give them a call, 317-410-3377. That's 317-410-3377. Tell Terry the Balance said to give you a call, and they'll give you a special discount. And a nice handshake there. Hey, welcome back to The Balance. My name's Saul Mark with El Presidente. We're going to jump right into the second hour. Thanks so much to our guests. The first hour, we had Rich Nye at WTHR Sports. And do we still have Jay with us? Jay, are you still with us? I think Jay had to go. I didn't know for sure if we had him. But Jay Graves of the jgravesreport.com. Also, Mr. Chad, a.k.a. Axel. Chad, I think you are still with us, correct?
Yes, I am.
And also $2 Bill. Josh, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you, Tom?
I am doing good and fantastic. And also, joining us for Hoop Saturday. We do this every Saturday morning, second hour of the show, and we'll be doing it all the way up through March. And the second hour is dedicated to college hoops. Talk to college basketball, Big Ten, and as we move closer to March, obviously there's a lot of other teams that we'll be talking about throughout the season. Mr. Jimmy the Intern, are you with us, sir?
Tom, I am on the line on the drive back from Madison, Wisconsin.
And that's got to be a long drive of nothingness. And Mr. Evan Williams from Purdue University of Bleeding Gold and Black. Evan, are you with us, sir?
I'm here, Tom. Good morning.
All right. Well, I want to jump right into this. I know it's not quite college hoops, but I do want to mention this, and I want to let Jimmy the Intern talk about this. Those of you that follow me on my social media, I tweeted the other night that IU has yet again got themselves a four-star recruit. Jimmy, break the news, and can they hold on to this one?
I would hope so. I mean, after Gunnar Keel, I'm not going to be taking anything to the bank, but National Signing Day is a lot closer, and this kid actually seems like a pretty decent quarterback prospect in his own right. Modesto, California, 6'5", 220-something, pro-style quarterback, strong arm, accurate, and it seems like the kind of guy that Kevin Wilson would have gotten had he been at Oklahoma. And it looks like this is a pretty good get for an Indiana program that, coming into this month, had only one quarterback on the roster, Trey Roberson. So at least from here, he'll have some competition if he wants to keep that starting spot.
All right, well, let's just jump right into the hoop action. And we're going to start with Evan Williams, Purdue University. All right, Evan, give us a summary of the past week of what Purdue has done. And looking forward to next week, what has Purdue got to do? And Purdue is also struggling a little bit here in the Big Ten. So we'll start with you, and we'll move around our expert of panels, panel of experts on some college hoop action. So, Evan, you're up, sir.
All right, Tom. So right now, Purdue stands at 14-7 overall with a 4-4 record in the Big Ten. Just going back to last weekend, Purdue was blown out by Michigan State. Very bad game overall. And, I mean, I know there was some travel problems involved there. They were unable to fly out because of the weather, so they had to drive up to East Lansing in the morning. Many of the players didn't get much sleep, so that had a little effect, I think, on the loss, but still no excuses for how bad they lost in that game. And then Tuesday, I was at the game against Michigan, and it was just a heartbreaker because same pattern, you know, we started out down early, got down by a big lead, but then we came back, charged back in the second half and took the lead eventually, and just couldn't hang on to it and lost 66-64 to the Wolverines. It was a tough loss because it would have been a very good win for Purdue against a ranked team. I think that could have helped kind of turn things around, you know, get some momentum going into this tough stretch of games coming up. But just going to have to move on. And today, Purdue's up in Evanston, facing off against Northwestern, which is a big game. If Purdue can win, I think that'll just get some momentum going into the IU game next Saturday, I believe. And that's a very, very important game for the state of Indiana. I mean, it's either IU or Purdue. So I think that's what Purdue's going on right now. And there's just got to be a lot of improvements if Purdue wants to continue and have a shot at making it to the NCAA tournament.
All right, so we'll start with Josh, and we'll work our way around back to Jimmy. But, all right, Josh, do you have any questions or any thoughts on Purdue University for Evan?
Not particularly on Purdue University. As it currently exists, at least not the current team. Evan, have you got a chance to see Ronnie Johnson play down at North Central? I've got a chance to see him. I think he's going to be pretty good. Purdue also has several recruits coming in next year. Do you think any of the incoming freshmen are going to start next year, or is that not Matt Painter's style?
I do think that there's a potential chance that two freshmen could start next year. It just all depends on who's going to work hard. Matt Painter's a guy who loves hard workers. If you're going to put in the time and you're going to work hard, you'll see the court. So I think it depends. I think Ronnie Johnson, like you said, has a very good chance of coming in right away and starting at point. If he works hard, he's going to have to fight with his older brother, Tyrone, for that starting spot. But I haven't seen full games of Ronnie. I've seen highlights online. I've seen videos of games online. And I really like his style. He's a scoring point guard. And I think Purdue needs all the scoring help they can get, to be honest. And since Lewis Jackson's graduating, I think Ronnie could definitely see the floor a lot, if not just start right out next year. And then also 7-foot center A.J. Hammonds coming in from Oak Hill Academy. I think that if he develops and he works on his game, he really puts in the time when he gets to West Lafayette in the summer. I think he could definitely start. Purdue's one of the biggest deficiencies they've had this year is being able to have an inside scoring presence. And I think if Hammonds works on his game and earn the starting spot, he can be a huge help to Purdue right away next year.
All right, we'll move right along to Mr. Chad, a.k.a. Axel. Chad, do you have any thoughts on Purdue and the Big Ten in hoop action?
Do you think Purdue will ever crack the top 25 this year?
I think that if Purdue can get a couple big wins coming up, they could. But, I mean, right now, it's not looking too good. I mean, I think they'd have to win at Northwestern today. If they beat IU, I mean, they would have to – I don't know how at Ohio State it's going to go, but I think they'd pretty much have to win the majority of their games from here on out if they would like to make it in the top 25 this season.
All right, and we saved the best for last. Mr. Jimmy, the intern, goes to IU, studying radio broadcasting, covers the IU Hoosiers, who just loves to talk Purdue basketball. We know it, but go ahead and fire away at Mr. Evan Williams.
Well, I will ask this, Evan, and I'll get back to like recruiting in a second because you actually brought up something that I think would be interesting to talk about, but regarding this year's team, what's been their biggest weakness? Because really, from an outsider's perspective, it looks like these guys are really wanting for a decent presence in the post, either on offense or defense. It seems like Travis Carroll and company have come up a little short there.
I think that offensively, it's definitely the lack of a post presence. There's a lot of guys who are good three-point shooters, but you can only shoot three so many times. I think because of guys like Travis Carroll and Sandy Marchuch and Jacob Lawson aren't as refined on offense, it's really hurting Purdue, and we're really seeing how much of an impact Juwan Johnson had because you were able to feed him the ball down low and he could get it done, he could score. But I think right now defense has really been hurting them, giving up way too many three-point shots, especially to Michigan and then the loss to Wisconsin a couple weeks ago. That was the biggest thing, that they could have limited the three-point chances they gave them. I think Purdue would have won those games easily.
All right. Well, we'll keep on the discussion here with Jimmy as we move on to the next Big Ten school. Make sure that we cover our Indiana schools first because that's where we're located at, and, you know, we could do it that way. But we will get into more detail with some of the other teams here. As you mentioned, Jimmy, you're driving back from Wisconsin. Josh and I watched a little bit of that game the other night. Tell us, I hate to use the same words over and over again, but what happened to IU again?
Oh, there are a couple things in particular that happened to IU and Madison, chief among them, losing to the Badgers. I think that's the one that everyone's going to focus and dwell on, as well they should. I will say this, though, that when IU went up there, went up to Wisconsin, they went there knowing that they hadn't won a game, that team hadn't won a game in Wisconsin since 1998. So we're going back, DJ White never won a game there. Roderick Wilmot never won a game there. You can go back to Tom Coverdale. He never won a game there. The 2002 Final Four team, national title team, did not win in Madison that year. So Wisconsin's never been a particularly easy place to play. And this was supposed to be a little bit different coming in because of how much better IU is and how apparently down Wisconsin is. Wisconsin played the tempo they like to play. IU dealt with it really well in the first half and was really beating Wisconsin at their own game. But in the second half, Wisconsin battened down the hatches a little bit, kept their tough post defense up, cut off lanes to the rim for Verdell Jones, and it really made it a game where IU had to shoot a few more three-pointers. They couldn't get to the free throw line, and they couldn't get called. Tom Crean afterwards was really unhappy with the officiating crew, although he didn't say it out loud, probably because he didn't want to get fined. But Cody Zeller was never able to get into a rhythm. He was in foul trouble most of the night. He picked up a foul basically on the second possession of play and within the first 2 minutes. And Wisconsin down the stretch just made more plays than Indiana. They made the plays they had to make to win the game. And just about everybody on that team was as broken up about it as I'm sure many of the fans were.
All right, we'll start with Josh. Josh, IU Wisconsin, questions for Jimmy.
Okay, my question, this is kind of a question, kind of a comment. Okay, yes, IU's having a much better season this year. They have recruits coming in. It seems like in the big games, Tom Crean consistently gets out coached. My question to you, Jimmy, is Crean really a good coach, or is he just a guy who can get players to want to come, and maybe he, a school like IU,
maybe he's a good fit for Marquette, but maybe to school for IU, he'd be a better recruiter unless somebody else who's a little better at X and O's take over? Or would you say that's an unfair characterization?
Well, I think and you really put me on the spot here, but that's fair because that's something that IU fans have been discussing for a while. I've had this discussion with numerous fans on Twitter, and I think my position on this is that there are better game coaches in the country than Tom Crean, without question. That, I think, is his Achilles heel, which is unfortunate in a culture used to Bob Knight, used to coaches who know exactly what they're doing, who consistently outcoach the opposition on a nightly basis. I don't think that's Tom Crean's strength. He's not an X's and O's guy. Like you mentioned, he's a really good recruiter. I mean, he was an outstanding recruiter at Marquette. He's become a more outstanding recruiter, or has allowed Indiana to help him become a more outstanding recruiter. But the other thing, too, that he's very good at doing is motivating his teams, motivating his players to play hard and beyond their means. I don't think there's a coach in the country that I would pick to get his guys to play with an edge, toughness, and tenacity early in the season than Tom Crean, because you saw it against Kentucky. John Calipari is another guy who relies on recruiting, who relies on talent. And Crean's IU team just played harder. They played tougher than Calipari's team. Out-coached Calipari, and Indiana won a game that talent dictated they shouldn't have won. Now, I do think when IU ends up getting more talent to Bloomington, it's going to make them just that much better. This team still isn't among the most elite talented teams in the Big Ten. They're very middle of the pack. I think that they've succeeded to the degree that they have so far this year speaks to the fact that Crean's getting them to play hard. I don't think they're going to win many games with X's and O's down the stretch. If you need to draw up a play in the last couple seconds of a game, I think you can find many better coaches. But for a guy who's going to bring elite talent to Bloomington and is going to get them to all play very hard, get them to play smart together with an edge, I don't think you could ask for a better guy. And to answer an implied part of your question, I do think Indiana can win a national title with Tom Crean. They just need an elite level of talent to do it, and I think that's in his game plan.
All right, Chad, you're up. IU basketball and Jimmy the intern, Jimmy Kavanaugh, who was just up at Wisconsin covering that game.
Yeah, my question would be that do you anticipate, unlike the case of John Calipari, that Tom Crean would be able to avoid the one-and-done scenarios with the recruits he's bringing in?
The one-and-done scenarios, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's kind of the nice thing about the targets that he's been recruiting. And believe you me, I can talk recruiting all day long because of how much intrigue has gone into it, how much focus has been on it here, down in Bloomington at least. With the recruits that Crean's been bringing in, he hasn't been really targeting those one-and-done guys that Calipari has. Kentucky's been doing one way of approaching high-level recruiting by bringing in the absolute top-tier talent, teaching them to play as a team for 1 or 2 years before they go off to the NBA. Just about every guy that Crean's been bringing in, like taking a look at the 2012 recruiting class, Yogi Ferrell is an outstanding point guard, and I think he'll step in and be the best point guard on the team, but he's not somebody who has prototypical NBA size. He'll need to stay a couple years if he wants to get his stock up. Jeremy Hollowell's a guy who I think has the talent, but still needs refinement. And it goes on and on down the list. Even Honor Perret needs some more refinement. He needs to work on his game, needs to have some tools. So you're looking at a squad that's going to be a whole bunch of experienced players who learned to play together for a couple of years in Bloomington, but have elite-level talent that could end up getting them drafted into the NBA with a little more season. So I think Crean's done a very good job so far of balancing those two goals, balancing out talent and balancing out guys who are going to be around a while.
All right, Mr. Evan Williams, Purdue, time to turn the table a little bit. Throw a few darts at IU. Go ahead.
Well, Jimmy, I was just kind of continuing recruiting. I was just kind of wondering, if you're Coach Crean next year, who starts the point guard? Do you start senior Jordan Holes or do you start Yogi Ferrell from day one?
Quite honestly, and I'll bring this back to the Wisconsin game, because one of the bigger issues against the Badgers was the fact that IU was not able to get assists. They weren't able to move the ball around and get the quick, easy baskets coming off of assists from the point guards. I mean, Verdell Jones had a solid game, 12 points in the first half, only missed one shot. But in the second half, Wisconsin did a good job cutting down the driving lane. Same with Jordan Holmes. He had a really strong game rebounding. He shot the ball decently, but wasn't quite quick enough to shed the Badger defense. I think if there's one thing this IU team is missing, besides a big bruiser in the post, not named Tom Pritchard, is a point guard who can really get things set up on the offense and facilitate for his teammates. Neither Jordan Holes or Real Jones is quick enough or has a refined enough handle at this point to become the guy that IU fans need him to be, that the IU program needs to have in a point guard in order to take this program to the next level. I think Yogi Ferrell is that guy. I think he's quick enough with the ball. I think he makes good enough decisions. And most importantly, has the speed to be able to get both keep the defense honest off the dribble. He has the perimeter shot to keep them honest on the perimeter. And with a point guard, that's really what takes Crean's offense, the offensive set, to the next level, quite honestly. Because looking at this year's team, that's the one thing they miss, a guy who can get into the lane, penetrate, and also pass off once in the lane to his other teammates. I think that's why we'll see Yogi Ferrell in the front court. I think that's well in the front court, but in the starting backcourt next season.
Okay, guys, we got to take a break. And I know when we get back, I know Josh will start with you when we get back. I know you were out at some high school games last night. You had some good conversations with some people. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be talking more college hoops and still to come, guys. Buy, sell, trade, and I speak in terms of stocks and bonds. What is the teams that has the highest stock? Which teams has now lost some value in the stocks? Obviously, we'll get into that. When we get back, we're going to continue our conversation about recruiting and some up-and-coming high school basketball stars, maybe in the Big Ten. Pump up the volume, pump up the volume, pump up the volume. Check it out.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
When you poop in your dreams, you poop for real.
All right, welcome back to the Balance. My name's Tom Marcusel, Presidente. We are talking college hoops. That's right, guys. It is getting to be that time of year when it is really heating up in the NCAA. And joining me is my panel of experts, Mr. $2 Bill Josh, Jimmy the Intern, Jimmy Cavanaugh, and also, last but not least, Mr. Evan Williams of Bleeding Golden Black, Purdue University. So glad that you guys could join us. We're back. We're talking to recruits and the up-and-coming stars in the NCAA. So we'll start right with you, Josh. Josh, I know last night you had an opportunity to go out to some high school basketball games. You also are going to be starting your own high school basketball blog. We'll be featuring on The Balance, www.thebalanceonline.com. But I know that you had an opportunity to talk to a few people last night, so we'll start with you, and we'll work our way back around. And Chad had to go, but it is the experts are still here. So we're ready to go. Josh, go ahead.
Well, last night I was over at the Bishop Chittard LaBeouf Jesuit game. And Yogi Ferrell, because this is the type of person he is, and this is why he's the perfect point guard for Indiana University. LaBeouf has a sophomore player by the name of C.J. Thompson, who I know Tom Crean has been doing everything he could do since he was in eighth grade to come to Indiana University. Yogi Ferrell was at the game last night. He had the night off. He wanted to support PJ, let him know he wants to play with him at IU. So I got to sit down with Yogi Ferrell for a half hour last night. We talked about everything from Park Tudor, which is where he plays, to Tom Crean, to the NBA. Yogi Ferrell said he's looking forward to getting down to Bloomington, Indiana. He would love to start as a freshman. He may or may not end up as a starter as a freshman. He said he's looking to build that camaraderie that Jimmy knows what this group's calling themselves. Make sure I know they have a special name. They all go to each other's high school basketball games. They're going to the movies together. They hang out. He's really excited to get down to Indiana University. And he wanted to tell the current IU players that as a future recruit, he's really proud of them and keep up the hard work.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to reserve judgment on him. I think that, again, he has a lot of potential. But, Jimmy, what are your thoughts? And we'll go ahead and we'll get into Evan, too. And we certainly want to have this recruiting conversation, but we do want to get into our stocks of the week. But go ahead, Jimmy. I'll let you go ahead and address what Josh just said. And, Evan, you can chime in on that as well. But I want to hold judgment back on him right now because – I'm just not one that likes to buy into all the hype, if that makes sense. But go ahead, Jimmy.
Well, I totally agree with that sentiment, Tom. I mean, there's no point in buying into excess hype before you see somebody and see how they play. And I will say this, the Yogi Ferrell, it's possible for teams to take away his offense, to take away the gaudy point totals. He's not somebody that I think is going to step in and average 20-7 from day one in the Big Ten. Big Ten's too tough a conference for that. But I do think that his impact is going to be every bit as big as people think it's going to be, just because he brings something to this IU team that the Hoosiers don't have right now. I'll also say this, that Yogi does seem like one of those guys who has a pretty decent head on his shoulders. His dad is a pretty big influence in his life, from what I understand, pulled him off the AAU circuit at a young age. Only reemerged in recent years, really added a whole lot to his game. He's a guy who works hard. He's a guy who keeps his head down. He's a guy who tries to stay humble. From what I understand, again, I haven't talked to him. I don't know the kid. Although I am entertained by the fact that he was at Chittard High School, early for the Chittard Brebeuf game, because Chittard's my alma mater. I'm sure they did a number on Brebeuf for old Trojans getting on it, but. Yeah, again, just picking up Yogi Ferrell and concluding my thought on him, I wouldn't necessarily expect him to light it up statistically from day one. I do think his impact cannot be overstated. He's going to be outstanding for Indiana.
Okay, Evan, go ahead. You're up.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Yogi's definitely going to have an impact for IU from day one because he's such a good point guard. Like he is a true point guard. He can score, but I wouldn't consider him a scoring point guard. I consider him more of a pass first. And I think that's really going to benefit IU. He's going to give all the guys scoring options, and that's what I think his best asset of his game is his ability to pass. The only thing that I could see limiting him is because of his size, it would be easier to shut him down offensively, but still, he's so fast. He gives himself the opportunities to score, so... I agree. I'm not going to say he's going to score 20 and post a bunch of assists right away, but he definitely has the talent and the potential to become that type of point guard in the Big Ten.
Well, and again, obviously the jury is still out on him. Now, Evan, I know you spent a lot of time looking at recruits and looking at some of the up-and-coming talents into the NCAA. Anybody that's on your radar that maybe we're not talking about right now, or maybe that a lot of people aren't talking about that you want to bring up?
As far as incoming recruits?
Yeah, incoming recruits or recruits that maybe have already committed that you'd like to talk about either in the Big Ten or across the board.
Well, I'll just start off with a Purdue guy. I got to get my Purdue shot from there for the day. One guy that I think is an underrated player and a guy that is going to be an impact player right away next year from Purdue is Raphael Davis. Davis is a 6'5 shooting guard from Fort Wayne, but he's playing this year at Wallamere School in LaPorte, Indiana. And I got a chance last weekend to go watch one of Wallamere's games. And he's a really good scorer. Wallamere, their entire starting lineup is Division I players. Jay Simpson, another Purdue recruit on the team. Hunter Perea, IU recruits on the team. They got a couple other D1 guys on that team. And Davis consistently leads the team in scoring. And that's not because he's a ball hog. It's because he gives himself the opportunity to score. He's very good at driving to the hoop and scoring. And he has a very good jump shot, I think. I think he's underrated, and, you know, he's considered a 3-star prospect by Rivals, 4-star by ESPN. But I really think he's an underrated guy, and he's going to be able to come in, maybe not start, but he's definitely going to see a lot of minutes next year and provide a good scoring option for Purdue.
All right, guys. Well, as we move forward and closer to March, and we'll kind of incorporate this into our conversation a little bit each and every week as we move closer into March and the brackets begin to take shape. Obviously, we've got a little bit of time to do that. But I kind of each week, and I know we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Big Ten, but I want to spend before we go right into our stock report for the week is I want to talk about some teams that maybe we can look for in March that nobody's talking about right now, so that later on in the season, after the March Madness is coming to an end and we have our championship brackets in line, our Final Four, we can all wear I Told You So badges. So my first I Told You So badge of the season that I want everybody to look out for and know that you heard it first here from Tom El Presidente, the Rush Limbaugh of sports. Murray University, guys, goes to the Sweet 16, a Cinderella team that possibly makes it to the Final Four. So we'll start with you, Mr. Jimmy the Intern. Murray State, are they for real?
Oh, man, Tom, I'm not going to lie. I thought you said Purdue there for a second. I was going to ask what you were smoking and where I could get some. But Murray State, I don't know if I agree with that necessarily. I think they've been really fortunate so far in their schedule. I think their schedule's been kind of soft, and they've won the games they've needed to. They've won tough contests against Morehead State. They beat Memphis earlier on in the year when Memphis was ranked. But looking at this Murray State team, I think that they're a great story. I think they'll finish the regular season undefeated, and they should definitely get to the NCAA tournament with a decent enough seed. But these guys scream what San Diego State screamed to me last year, only a bit louder. A team that is taking advantage of its situation in a pretty weak conference, and a team that, you know, has some talent and they're well coached, but there's only so far that they can go because they're not the type of team, in my opinion, that traditionally makes that Cinderella run. I think that they're a little outgunned both on the perimeter and in the post. They're a really well-put-together team for the talent level they have, but there's a lot more that they could do. If they were a better shooting team, I think they would have a better chance to make an upset. If they're a better post team, I think they'd have a better chance, matching depending on matchup, to go a little further. But I don't think this is a team built for a long run in the NCAA tournament, so if you're right, I'll be the first to admit that you did indeed tell me so, but for now, I don't see it with Murray State.
Well, one thing about Murray State is they're starting to get some looks from top recruits that probably people think, well, we're going to fly into Nashville. Am I going to go to Valparaiso? Am I going to go over to UK or something? And then they get in that long car ride over to Murray Irwin, and they're probably thinking, where are you taking me and where are you going to leave my body? Murray State is out in the middle of nowhere, for those of you who do not know where Murray, Tennessee is. It's nowhere. There is nothing there to do. It is in the middle of Hickville. But I tell you what, these guys are winning games, and they're starting to get noticed. So I'm gonna hold on to that's my I told you so badge of the week. So Josh, go ahead. What are your thoughts on Murray State?
I agree with Jimmy so much. In fact, Tom, I'm going to take his criticism of Murray State one step farther. If Murray State, by some miracle, makes it to the Sweet 16, Tom, I will take you to St. Elmo's and I will buy you the shrimp cocktail.
There you go. You heard it, guys. You guys were witnesses. I'm going to get me some shrimp cocktail. Shrimp gumbo. You can do this with shrimp. Evan, come on, man. Jump on board with me here, man. I got another badge here waiting for somebody to carry it with pride.
I can't agree with you, Tom. I'm just not sold on Murray State. I don't think their schedule is tough enough to consider them a Sweet 16 contender. I know anything can happen in the tournament, but right now I just can't see Murray State getting that far.
All right, guys. We will see. Real quickly, while we're on the I Told You So badges, does anybody have one that they want to put on? Go ahead, Jimmy. Do you have one?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll say this much, that I think, you know, I'll stay in the Big Ten because we're kind of on that topic. If there's a team in the Big Ten that screams, I told you so, a team that could make a surprisingly deep run based on where I'm sure they'll finish, Michigan is intriguing. Michigan's an intriguing group because the way they run that B-line offense and the way they can shoot and the way they play, they can lose to just about anybody, but they can beat just about anybody, too, on a given night. We saw last year when they absolutely blew out their opponent in the first round. Looked great, Michigan did. And I think we could end up seeing that. If Michigan can string together some consistency, they get better point guard play from Trey Burke than they got from Darius Morris last season. And really, that's kind of what did them in, the fact that they didn't have quite enough on the perimeter. They get him going. They get Tim Hardaway Jr. going. I think these guys can pull an upset or two in the tournament. And if you're looking for a real dark horse to go far, I think Michigan might be your team.
That's not such a dark horse. I don't think that's it. We'll get into that in the stock report of the week. Real quickly, Josh, you have an I told you so badge you want to put on.
Keep an eye out for San Diego State in the tournament. I don't think they can make it past the Sweet 16. Nobody's about them. They still have Steve Fisher. They're still a defensive team, and they're going to go to the Sweet 16.
All right, Evan, what about you? Do you have one you want to put on?
I don't have one right now. I'm still kind of deciding on who I think is going to be able to make a run, one of those dark horse teams, per se. But I agree with Jimmy. I really think Michigan is going to surprise a lot of people and can make a really deep run in the tournament.
All right, guys. Well, you what? It's that time of the week where this is one of my favorite parts of the show, where we get to jump right into the stock report. And that's right. All right, it's the Ballot Stock Report. I see you, baby. Yeah. Buy, sell, trade, get rid of, let's not talk about. But it is time for the stock report, guys. And I really enjoy this because this really gets the heated conversations up. And, Josh, you're up first. So here's the stocks that I'm going to start out with, the top three stocks to buy, and then we'll move on from there. My stock to buy this week is Wisconsin. Yep, that's right. That's right, Jimmy. Wisconsin, these ladies and gentlemen are the hottest team in the conference, reeling off five victories in a row. And as you know, Indiana's one of them. Illinois, I don't know how this team ever lost three in a row, including a home loss to Iowa. But I tell you what, they're on the up and rising, so I buy them this week. Josh, you're up.
I would buy Kentucky, North Carolina, and I'm also going to buy Illinois with Brandon Poole.
Okay, Josh, we got to give you a little rules to the game because we'll give you a mulligan on this one because this is your first week. I say a team, you say whether or not you'd buy that team, sell that team, or leave it alone, okay? So we're on Wisconsin. That's giving you a hard time. We're on Wisconsin. Would you buy or sell that team? And we will get into some of these other teams in a moment, but would you buy or sell Wisconsin?
I would sell Wisconsin, I think.
Do what?
I would sell Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. Going to stay away from Wisconsin. All right, Jimmy, the intern, you were just up there. Is this a stock that you would buy this week?
I'm not going to lie, Tom. I don't think I'm buying Wisconsin because I watched a lot of that game, and I don't think IU played pretty well. Wisconsin played decently, but watching Wisconsin, I cannot in good conscience buy them just because I don't think they have enough good guard play. Jordan Taylor played horribly, and they got an outstanding game from their center, Jared Berger, and they had 8 blocked shots. I don't think they do that on a consistent enough basis to say that Wisconsin's a smart buy. So I'm going to stay away from them. I'm selling them.
All right, Jimmy, you're up. Buy or sell Wisconsin?
Oh, no, that was me. I'm selling Wisconsin.
I'm sorry, Evan. I knew who I was talking to. I was wondering why the heck Evan wasn't answering me. Evan, I apologize. Go ahead, buddy.
All right, Tom. I think I'll buy Wisconsin right now, but I'm not going to commit too much to them. I think Jordan Taylor, he's been struggling a bit this season. You know, after his great last season, everyone expected him to just come out and be one of the top players in the league, and he's definitely not that this year. But I think if he can get hot, I think this Wisconsin team becomes that much more dangerous. So I'm going to buy them right now, but not too much of a commitment there.
All right. We're going to move on to my next team, 3 stocks to buy. Number 2, Michigan State. 2-game losing streak, a 15-game winning streak, a 2-game losing streak, a 2-game winning streak. Forget about it. The Spartans look to be dialed in, though. I'll put it that way. During the last days here in January, moving up toward March in the Big Ten tournament with the toughest, most physical team in the league again, yet again. Josh, do you buy, sell, or leave alone Michigan State?
I'm going to leave alone Michigan State. I haven't yet made up my mind if they're a serious tournament team.
All right, Mr. Jimmy, the intern, buy, sell, or leave alone Michigan State?
I think it depends on what you're when we're buying them for. If we're buying them for the tournament, I don't know if I want to do that necessarily. But if we're buying them for the regular season, I really like this Michigan State team just because I think on average they'll be able to grind some teams down. This actually looks kind of like the inverse of one of the normal Tom Izzo teams that you see, just because they look like they're built really well for the regular season, but I don't know too much about the tournament. They seem like a team that someone could get hot, someone could knock them off, and, you know, that would be that. I don't think these guys are built for the long haul.
All right, Mr. Evan, buy, sell, trade, leave alone Michigan State.
Right now, Tom, I think I'm going to leave alone Michigan State. They're a very good team, but I can easily see a team knocking them off if they get hot. There's a lot of holes in that team, I think. They're very strong up front, but I think they lack a little bit in the backcourt. So right now I'm just going to leave them alone.
Okay. Well, moving on through my last team to buy, and then we'll go into teams to sell. Ohio State, them Buckeyes, I don't know about you guys, but I think the Buckeyes have definitely looked a lot better. I think they are for sure dialed in as well since that loss at Illinois, 3 wins in a row, and counting for the best team in the Big Ten. Come on. Don't act so shocked by that statement. Ohio State, you all know it's true. Josh, what are your thoughts?
I'm going to sell Ohio State. I think they're a great regular season team, but Jared Solinger cannot get them to the Final Four. There's too many people out there that can shut them down in the tournament.
All right, Mr. Jimmy, the intern, buy, sell, trade, leave alone Ohio State.
You know, I find myself agreeing with Josh an awful lot because from watching this,
that is a very bad thing to do. I want you to know that. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I'm just going to say this. Ohio State team, I think he's right that they're a great regular season team. I think they have the potential to be a really good tournament team. If they play to their capability the way they should, I think they're better than any team in the country. The problem is they walk such a thin margin. I mean, this is a different team from last year because they're not even as deep as last year's team was. They don't have the perimeter shooting that last year's team had. And last year's team didn't make it to the Final Four. I think they're really good. I think they're a really solid team. They can make another Elite Eight run this year, but there are too many chances that they could get tripped up. And I'll say this much, though. They get to the Final Four, I think they're a legitimate national championship contender. And I think they can beat anybody in the country on a given night just because of Jared Sellinger. Lenzel Smith can get hot from beyond the arc. But really, when I'm looking at these guys, I see there's too many things that could go wrong with them.
All right, Evan, you're up. Ohio State, leave them alone, buy, sell, or trade.
If Ohio State plays to their ability, very few people can beat them, so that's why I'm going to buy them right now. I just think if they have a good game, then you're going to have to play out of your mind to beat them. So I'm going to buy Ohio State.
All right. Well, on the risk of getting on your capital S list, Evan, my stock's to sell. I'm going to start out with Purdue. I got to dump these guys. I mean, look at the resume. Not impressive. The Boilermakers have no victories over ranked teams, and honestly, haven't beaten any team that they shouldn't have beaten. And they have some bad losses. And is this really an NCAA team this year? I don't know. I'm kind of scratching my head, wondering what Matt Painter's doing out there. In fact, right now I'm rubbing my goatee as we speak. Josh, Purdue University.
I hate to do it to you, Evan. I also got to agree. So I think Matt Painter's going to realize he should have taken a job at a bigger school and he had the chance. It's just about done for him at Purdue now that Johnson and Moore are gone.
All right, Jimmy.
I think I agree. I don't like this Purdue team. I don't like how they're built. I don't like their chances. Even if they do get to the tournament making a long run, they're too centered, I believe, on Robbie Hummel and Lewis Jackson. And Hummel has had too many games where he hasn't been effective. He's had to carry the load, and I don't think he can continue to do that down the stretch. I agree with you this time, Tom. I'm selling Purdue as well.
All righty. All right, I hate to do it to you, but go ahead. What are your thoughts?
Well, right now I'm going to leave Purdue alone. I can't agree with you, Josh, in saying that Matt Painter should have taken the Missouri job right away. I think Missouri is similar to Purdue. They're having a great year this year, but next year they couldn't. What am I trying to say here? You know, they could fall off. I think that's the kind of team that Missouri is too, with the talent level. Purdue's bringing in a much better recruiting class than Missouri is next year. There's been some tough games this year, some bad losses, not a lot of good losses, or not a lot of good wins, but a couple wins right here could completely change that around. If Purdue beats IU at home, IU's a ranked team, that would be a big win. If Purdue can, you know, go on the road and get a win at Illinois, win today at Northwestern, you know, knock off Michigan State at home, I think they can get back into tourney contention. And I'm going to leave them alone. I'm not going to buy them yet because they haven't shown me anything to buy yet. But I'm also not going to sell them. I'm not going to give up on this team too early.
All righty. We're going to move right through these. Northwestern, guys, sell them. Get rid of them. It's fun to root for those little lovable Wildcats in the quest for the school's first tourney berth. Come on, let's get us a Cinderella team. But Northwestern... look bad the last two times out, losing at Wisconsin and at Minnesota by like 43 points. I don't know. Purdue and Nebraska, what's it going to be? I don't know. I say just get rid of Northwestern. They're a stock that you guys don't want to hold on to. I would just dump them while you can. Josh, go ahead.
I would say sell because there's no giveaway option.
Okay. Jimmy.
You know, you're going to say I'm crazy on this one, but I'm going to have to take the contrarian approach because if we're doing stock, there's no team right now with a better chance
to rise, in my opinion, the Northwestern, just because it's going to be so tough to play at Welsh Ryan Arena this year. I think that's going to be one of the tougher places to play. We saw them beat Michigan State. I think they could snipe off another couple of top-tier teams in the Big Ten. And if they steal a couple road games against, you know, lesser competition, we're looking at a team that could end up sneaking into the tournament, a la Penn State last year. They've got experience. They've got some scoring on the perimeter. And they've got the ability down inside to, you know, hold down the block a little bit, get some boards. And I think this is a team that it's not a sure thing by any stretch of the imagination, but I think this is a team that has a decent enough chance to get to the tournament just from how well they play at home.
Well, I can see, Jimmy, you're a risk taker, so it looks like you're going to make a lot of money off Northwestern if that comes true. All right, Evan. Evan, Northwestern, buy, sell, trade, or leave alone?
Right now, I think I'm going to sell Northwestern. I mean, other than the Michigan State win, I just haven't seen much that would make me want to buy them. They're currently 11th in the Big Ten, behind, you know, a team like Nebraska, who I think is probably the worst team in the Big Ten, talent-wise at least. So right now, I'm still going to have to sell Northwestern. I mean, like, anything can happen in the Big Ten. If they win a couple big games here and there, that could change. But right now, I'm going to have to sell.
All righty. Well, last one to buy, sell, or I mean last one to sell for the week, Illinois. I say get rid of these guys. This team just gives me the heebie-jeebies. They beat Ohio State one day, lose to Penn State the next. It's just a team you can't trust from game to game. I mean, I love the defense, guys, but the offense is just spotty and all over the place. And ask yourself this, who the heck leads that team? Josh, Illinois, get rid of them, keep them, or sell them?
I'm going to keep them. I think Illinois has a chance to be really good. Brandon DePaul is a really good player. They may not be a great regular season team, but you got to play like Brandon DePaul gets hot in the tournament. Watch out.
All right, Jimmy, go ahead.
I'm selling them with you, Tom, because while Brandon DePaul could indeed get hot in the tournament, he could also stink it up. And he's a career 30% three-point shooter. And I don't want the discrimination bias that we saw against Ohio State carry over, bleed over to the rest of everything. You said that it gives you the heebie-jeebies. I'll agree with that. There's something about this Illinois team. I don't know how good they are. I'm going to sell them.
All right, Evan, Illinois.
Right now with Illinois, I'm going to leave alone. I'm in the middle about them. They have the great win against Ohio State, and then they lose to Penn State. I think that's kind of been their mantra for most of the Big Ten season. They'll get a big win, but then they'll get a bad loss. So right now, I'm going to stay in the middle. If Brandon Paul plays well, then this is a lot better team. If Myers Leonard, the big guy, if he plays well, it's a lot better team. So right now, I'm going to have to just stay in the middle. But this team has the potential to get hot and really make a run.
Well, there you go, guys. Buy, sell, or trade, and we'll do it again next week. We've got about 5 minutes or so left here. I just kind of want to talk about some, you know, basic random things or just a couple things that come to mind to finish off the show. I really like some wins this year, Michigan. This week, Michigan over Purdue. Again, sorry, Evan, I got to get on your S list there. Wisconsin over Illinois. Michigan State, again over Purdue. Those are three impressive wins. I'm sorry I said this week, but I just meant impressive wins that I was thinking about this week. I apologize. And here's the thing, guys. Let's just go ahead and start this debate right now. We probably won't be able to finish it, probably move forward into it next week if we have to. But who's the better freshman, Indiana's Cody Zeller or Michigan's Trey Burke? See, it's a more difficult argument than many thought. Because I think, honestly, I like Cody Zeller a lot, and I'm an IU fan, and I swing with them. I roll with them. I love them. I like Cody. He's doing a great job. But when you put him up against Trey Burke, I don't know. It's hard for me to make that decision, but if you put a gun to my head right now, guys, I'd say Trey Burke is a better freshman than Cody Zeller. So we'll start with you, Josh.
I'm going to have to go with Trey Burke, but it's not Cody Zeller's fault. It comes down to Jordan Halls, and the other guards will not get Cody Zeller the ball in the post for whatever reason.
All right, Jimmy, you would know the answer to this question better than anybody, and I think I know what direction you're going to swing, but go ahead.
Well, I think Josh just answered it really well, that the guard play hasn't really helped Cody Zeller. But if you're asking in a vacuum who's the better freshman, I don't think there's a question that it's Cody Zeller. Trey Burke gets the ball in his hands a lot more. But if Cody Zeller had a better team around him, feeding him the ball, getting him the ball, I think Cody Zeller would prove that he was the superior player in spades. I don't think there's a question in my mind.
All right, Evan, what are your thoughts?
I like both of these guys, but what intrigues me about Trey Burke is that he was not highly recruited. He was not a highly ranked recruit. Cody, IU knew what they were getting with Cody Zeller. They were getting a top 20 recruit who was going to come in from day one and be a big impact player, and he has been. He's been great for IU this year. I agree that they don't feed him the ball enough in the post. I think that Kentucky game would have not come down to a last-second shot had they fed Zeller the ball more, I think. But right now, I think Trey Burke has just been so impressive because he's come in and filled in for Darius Morris when he left for the NBA. And he's done a very good job filling in at the point guard. And I don't think anyone expected that. He's a three-star recruit, middle-of-the-pack recruit. And he's really come in and had a great season for the Wolverines.
All right, guys, we're going to be wrapping it up here. We've got about 3 minutes left here, and there's just some games that are coming up here this week that are going to be some good games. And just chime in whatever you want from the last minute or so. But I really like this Michigan and Ohio State game. I think Ohio State's going to really dominate and come out in that game. Michigan State at Illinois. I like Michigan State in that game. And Indiana at Michigan. This game scares me. I want to say Indiana, but Indiana just is not playing the way that I feel like they need to feel like they need to be playing at this time in the season in the Big Ten. They need another win in the Big Ten, and they really need to get their act together, but I think Michigan has a good shot of beating Indiana, guys. All right, Josh, just real quickly, what are your thoughts on upcoming games or any of these games? Go ahead.
I believe Saturday, Indiana's at Purdue or Purdue's at Indiana. I can't remember exactly where that place is going. Game's going to take place. But IU has got to win that game. They have got to beat Michigan or hang up the tournament and say hello to the NIT.
Jimmy?
I'm going to have to disagree with that, saying that I look at the schedule. It's going to be really hard for IU to miss the NCAA tournament with the wins they have. But I will say this, that if they lose to Iowa, I think they're looking at a four-game losing streak. If they lose to Iowa, they're not going to beat Michigan on the road. They're not going to beat Purdue on the road. I will say this, Tom, too, just building off what you said about the Michigan-Ohio State game, I think Michigan has a chance there. I think if they get Jared Sellinger into a little foul trouble and they do a good job defending the perimeter, not letting Lenzel Smith get open shots, I think Michigan could shock the world a little bit, upset Ohio State.
All right. Evan, real quickly, any final thoughts?
A lot of big games coming up in this next coming week, kind of, I think, can make and break team season. Michigan has a great shot at Ohio State the way they've been playing and how they play together. But then I think it comes down to next Saturday, IU at Purdue, big game for both schools. Bragging rights are on the line until the next matchup, so that's a big game I'm looking forward to.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Well, guys, that's going to put an end to our time. We are out of time. So, real quickly, Jimmy, where can people find your work and your masterpieces?
You can follow me on Twitter at JPCIV. That's at JPCIV. And check out iusportcom.com for my written work.
All right. Evan, go ahead.
You can follow me on Twitter at Evan_Williams25. And you can also follow my blog at bleedinggoldenblack.blogspot.com.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for The Balance. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente, coming to you live from the Balance Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana. Make sure you get down to Indianapolis if you are close enough to get here. Get down to the Super Bowl Village, do that zip line. We'll see you guys next week. Remember, don't drink and drive. It just isn't worth it.
Boo!
Boo!
That was the worst thing I ever heard.
It was terrible.
Horrendous.
Well, it wasn't that bad.
Oh, yeah?
Well, there were parts of it I liked.
Yeah, I liked a lot of it.
Yeah, it was good.
It was great.
It's wonderful.
Oh, bravo.
More.
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 me?
Well, when you, I say when you gotta go, you gotta go.
You have made me very angry. Very angry indeed.
Oh, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, gun. You thought I was gonna say son of a bitch, didn't you? That's all, folks.